Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I've Pet That Dog is a Twitter handle and social media account run by 12-year-old Gideon Kidd of Cedar Falls. He pets one dog a day and shares his canine stories with hundreds of thousands of followers. Now he and his mom have written a book. It's called Pet That Dog, and I'll talk with the authors later this hour. But first, do you ever feel like you've lost your creative spark? Or maybe you don't think you've ever had a creative spark. For my next guest, creativity is as essential as breathing, and she wants to help others find a way to harness their creative energy as well. Mary Potter Kenyon lives in Dubuque. She is a certified grief counselor and a program coordinator for Shalom Spirituality Center. She's also a prolific author, and her latest book is Called to Be Creative, A Guide to Reigniting Your Creativity, and she's on the line with me now. Mary, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for having me.
So, Mary, a lot of us think about creativity, I think, as kind of a luxury, something that we can do if we have time for it. And I know that that's not how you feel about it. And I also know that's not how your mother felt about creativity. She was an incredibly creative woman, and she seemed to create out of necessity. Tell me about your mom.
So my mother and father raised 10 children in poverty, but somehow, and I don't think I noticed it as much as a kid because it's just mom, somehow my mother managed to create and beautify our home with the things that she made, from wall hangings made out of burlap and buttons to rag rugs and quilts, teddy bears made out of a wool coat, our little denim jumpers made out of her denim skirts. And even in the way she managed to feed our large family with very little, potatoes and onions and the chickens that we raised. So I grew up with that kind of mother, but also the kind of woman who would, at the age of 42, sit down and think, oh, I think I'll just carve a piece of wood with a knife and a piece of wood, as if most of us wouldn't even think to try something like that, you know, one summer afternoon.
Right, and especially in our 40s, it seems like a strange time to pick up a new hobby, a new skill. But tell me a little bit about your mom and her wood carvings, because it is extraordinary what she did with them.
So the doctor had said she needed more time outside, and that's what she decided to do, as she sat outside with a piece of wood, and it was a very rustic piece that she made. She didn't even know how to make legs on a wolf that would be attached, so she made the legs and glued them to the wolf. But she eventually made a home business out of the wood carvings that she created, and she made totem poles and owls and just beautiful wood carvings, a self-taught artist that she was, and began selling some of those creations and selling paintings. And so she created a home business. So I was surrounded by creativity. I mean, even with my father, who could take apart two non-working stereos and make a working stereo, or spend hours outside somehow fixing a car that was on its last legs. You know, it's just, so I saw this kind of, the possibilities for us were like endless. We could do anything. You didn't have to have money to be able to do things. You just, so that's kind of the home that I grew up in.
Well, and she also nurtured your creativity. And again, at a time where, gosh, with 10 kids and very little money, it's hard to imagine thinking that creativity was a really important part of life. But what did she do to nurture your natural creativity?
Well, I was kind of a loner and would make up stories in my head even as a child. So walking to and from school, I had all these stories that I would go home and write down. And plus, I was a reader, so I imagined to write stories as magic. And after my mother passed away, I found in her things, she had saved a book I'd made when I was 10 years old. I mean, it's awful drawings and terrible poetry.
As most 10-year-old work is,
really,
yes.
Right. And she saw that in me. She saw something. And one day when I came home from school and in my sock drawer, she had put a Big Chief tablet, which half your audience probably doesn't even know what that is, but that's paper, you know, a tablet of paper. And we didn't say anything. She didn't say anything, but that means she saw that in me and I started using that, you know. So she found ways to encourage us. And the thing is, she believed each and every one of us, every single person, all of her children, and everybody is born with some inherent creativity or talent or gift or whatever you want to call it. And she could see that in her children. And we as parents can see that in our children. We can see this person has a gift for talking to the elderly. This child has a gift with animals. This child has a gift with gardening. It doesn't have to be something you hang on your wall. It doesn't have to be museum quality, but we each have something in us.
The way your mom gave you that tablet, that seems so special. It must have almost felt like a magical secret to just find that there in your drawer.
It was. It did feel like that. And there was some show on TV, The Waltons. I think the very first show, John Boy Walton, was hiding something under his mattress. And his mother found it, and it was a tablet. I mean, and then she realized that he'd been writing, and that was his. And so my mother was like that mother. I mean, she saw something and she encouraged it in a kind of a sneaky way without saying, because a lot of us grew up with parents who didn't tell us things. You know, my mother did say, I love you, but my father didn't, you know, it's just. And so that's the way they showed their love, is by encouraging. And even my father did. I mean, I'll never forget the words he said when you have a talent for writing and speaking, and never use them for evil, always use them for good. And I just laughed because that sounded like a funny thing to say. But I thought, oh, he said something. He complimented me. He saw something in me in seventh grade that I wasn't seeing in myself.
Yeah, what a powerful moment. This book, Mary, was born at a time of terrible loss for you, a time when you lost your mother, and a lot of your work on this book you actually did in your mother's home after her death. Tell me about that.
So after my mother died, I was one of the executors of the estate, and I took it upon myself to use her empty house as a private writing retreat. It was actually my husband's idea, because he knew that at home with kids and the internet and the phone, you know, it was hard to find that time to write. And so for 3 months, I spent a lot of time alone in her empty house with no internet service, no phone. Yes, heat, because it was winter, and just wrote. And I think I wrote more in those 3 months than I'd written in 3 years. It was just like an amazing, sad time, because I was doing a little crying along with a lot of writing and wandering around her house, and it felt like as if her creative spirit was there. And that's when I came up with the outline for what the book eventually would become, and just scribbled out these notes, because I'd also started speaking to some groups. And I spoke to young women at one end of the spectrum and older women at the other end of the spectrum. And I was asking them, you know, do you believe your children have talents? Yes, both ends of the spectrum believed that. But when I asked about themselves, oh my gosh, the younger women said they didn't have time. And the older women either said, I don't have any talents, or it's too late for me now. And so that's when I thought, oh my gosh, there is a book in this somewhere. And so I made that first rough, messy outline and put it in a file folder for several years. But it was there, and I was reading about creativity and doing research, and started this book in 2017. That book that had been sitting there in my brain and in my file folder.
Well, tell me a little bit about your writing, because you talked about how busy your mother was. You have been equally busy in life with seven kids?
Eight. I have eight children.
Okay. Sorry, eight children.
And I was working on a master's in family services at UNI. when I gave birth to my fourth child and took my finals in the hospital bed and decided, oh, you know what? I think I'll abandon the pursuit of this master's and stay home with my own family because my family is now growing. But I think I instinctively knew that I needed something outside of parenting, something inside of parenting, however you want to put it, that as I raised my children, I needed something creative I could hang on to. And it wasn't painting or wood carving or sewing. I don't even know how to sew, or definitely wasn't baking and or gardening. But writing had been there since childhood. And I didn't do a lot of writing in college. And I saw that I got a C+ in creative writing at UNI. So it's just like, oh my God. So, but I saw a magazine that was looking for little stories and little essays, and they paid $50. And I thought, So I whipped off something in 20 minutes, sent it to them. I'm talking handwritten and sent in the mail. And a $50 check came in the mail, and that was it. That's all it took. I thought, yep, I can make money and stay at home and use my creativity. And so I clung to that through the birth of four more children after that first piece came out.
And homeschooling those children as well.
Yes. Yes. In 1993, I started homeschooling too. So it meant a lot of early mornings getting up before kids, or using your time at writing by the nightlight as you sat by children in bed, or pulling over to the curb. If a baby fell asleep in the back of the vehicle in the car seat, I just pull over the curb, pull out that notebook, and start writing. So I learned how to take advantage of small pieces of time to produce quite a bit of writing.
Yeah. Well, we are going to take a short break, Mary, and we'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Mary Potter Kenyon. Her most recent book is Called to Be Creative, A Guide to Reigniting Your Creativity. And we have been talking about her story and her creativity, and there's more to talk about, but we'll also talk about igniting your creativity as well. She's got some great tips. She lives in Dubuque, is a certified grief counselor and a program coordinator for Shalom Spirituality Center. And then in just about 20 minutes, I've Pet That Dog. Gideon Kidd and his mom, Rachel Bronigan, have not only conquered the internet, they've now produced a book. It's called Pet That Dog. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I'll talk with Gideon Kidd of Cedar Falls. He is the genius behind I've Pet That Dog. He shares his experiences meeting dogs with hundreds of thousands of followers on social media. Right now, we are talking about creativity. My guest is Mary Potter Kenyon, and her most recent book is Called to Be Creative, A Guide to Reigniting Your Creativity. And Mary, just before the break, you were talking about how you found these little moments to write when your kids were young and when you were raising many small children, but also homeschooling as well, finding those moments to write. And it wasn't just that it was a little bit of income on the side, which was needed. I get the sense that this was really a way to exercise your voice and your identity. Can you tell me a little bit more about what it meant to you to have that identity?
It wasn't easy. I when I do workshops for writing and new writers, and I think they imagine a glamorous life for a writer, I show them a picture. I had it made into an 8x10 picture of me with a baby on a backpack sitting at a typewriter. I'm sitting at the typewriter, not the baby. The baby's on the back. And I think of how I struggled so many times, even with a husband who at first who saw it as just this little hobby and didn't see at first how important it was to me, how I just needed that. I needed that time for creativity. I needed to be able to use my creativity. But it was not always easy. And then later, when my husband kind of turned, I don't know if it was the first $200 check that came or hearing other people or what it was or just how our marriage grew. But eventually he became my biggest supporter. And he was the one saying, hey, go out to write. Especially if I was a little bit grouchy. You know, he wouldn't say that. He'd just say, hey, isn't it time to go out to, you know, go out for coffee and do some writing or something. So in other words, he's saying, hey, you're grouchy. You're not doing what right. you need to do. You're not. And I think we all need that. We all need something in our life that is exciting that we can get lost in. And I do get lost in writing. I did it the other day. Saturday, I got up and started writing. And all of a sudden, my daughter's saying, hey, are we going to eat lunch? And I looked at the clock and she says, I got to go to work. It was 2:00 in the afternoon. And it's like, we all need that, what we can get lost in, because we're made to do that. That's finding our purpose, whatever it is. And, you know, it's just such a part of my life now that I need to do some writing almost every day.
You started a group for older people to exercise their creativity. And you talked about working with young mm-hmm. women and working with older women. And this group, mm-hmm. Your first group was not intended to be just a women's group, although it turned out that only women mm-hmm. signed up. But mm-hmm. you talked about in your book how some of these older women that you would talk to, when you said, you know, we're going to explore our creativity, there seemed to be almost a fear there. Have any creativity. Tell me mm-hmm. where you think that comes from.
Well, there must have been something in the group's description. This is at the Dyersville Library when I worked there, and that appealed to, it happened to be older women, and not all. I mean, there's some 30-year-old women there, but it was open to anybody. It just happened to appeal to women in midlife or a little above midlife, because I said, is there some deep restless stirring within you? Is there something? Were you the kid in school who got in trouble because you were daydreaming? Were you the one that had the book snatched out from underneath the desk because you were reading a book when you were supposed to be doing math, you know? And something, do you want your crayons back? And so I had this group of some women who already were painting or, you know, doing something with their creativity, but other women who weren't sure why they were there. And those actually ended up being my favorite women to work with, because I loved being a part of helping them find out what it was, what it is, what that is that's inside them that that group appealed to them. And one woman in her 70s had been writing poetry for 50 years, and she had had something published 50 years before that, but she did not submit anything. And she wrote beautiful poetry. And when I asked her why she had, because you could tell she wanted to get published, mm-hmm. she said, well, it's not good enough. Oh, my gosh. And I just, it kind of like broke my heart, but to see, to get her to be brave and to, okay, maybe they won't take it, but just send one thing out. And then that one thing was accepted. And then she sent something else and that was accepted. And now she can't stop writing, but to see that light come on in her eyes, to see her get the confidence to submit something. And another woman was terrified of painting. She'd never painted. And we joked with her and we, you know, got her to relax a little because we said, hey, if it doesn't look like what you want, just say you meant to do that. You know, just have fun with it. I was terrified to play a ukulele. I'd never played a musical instrument. And I actually stopped playing because my fingers weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing, and looked around, and another woman was having the same kind of problem, you could tell. And we started laughing, and then we tried again, because that was the whole point, to try different things, to have fun with it, to not worry about failure. And it was just such a fun group. And they ended up being my beta group for testing the activities I was going to include in my book, because I was working on the book at the time. So we did mind maps, and we did vision boards, and we just, you know, experimented with our creativity. It was a fun group.
In the book, you have clearly done an incredible amount of research on creativity and, mm-hmm. and met with so many people. You share a lot of other people's stories in addition to your own story. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed some of the quotes that you pulled in from other people. And one of them, you mentioned Hugh McLeod, said, "Everyone is born creative. Everyone is given a box of crayons in kindergarten. Then when you hit puberty, they take the crayons away and replace them with dry, uninspiring books on algebra, history, etc. Being suddenly hit years later with the creative bug is just a wee voice telling you, 'I'd like my crayons back, please.'" And I love that idea, although I loved school and I loved history and I get a lot of creativity out of that as well. But I do love that idea that, oh, you know, we can still play. We can still exercise mm-hmm. that part of ourselves. And you talk about that flow state that you get when you write. And a lot of people get into that kind of state, get lost with physical activities or mm-hmm. other things in their lives. I think it might be difficult to get there in a creative pursuit for someone who's carrying a lot of that fear about not being good enough. How do you help people get past that?
I always have them look to their childhood first. And some of us have to look farther back than others. But whenever I do workshops or presentations, I have them, the group, take time, and I do it in the book too, to look back to your childhood, back to 5, 6, 7 years old. What was it you were naturally interested in before somebody told you what you should be interested in? Or, you know, what was it you were drawn to? Did you follow your grandfather around in the garden? And were you fascinated with nature? Did you want to help your mother in the kitchen? Were you doodling all the time and coloring all the time and drawing all the time? Or was it like me, wanting to write the books? Or, you know, what was it? And that's kind of the start of us looking at, okay, and then when we got to school, what were the teachers saying? What were the adults in our lives telling us that they noticed in us? And if we can start to look back to those things, and we're not going to be, well, maybe we loved drawing as a kid, and now as a 40-year-old woman, we want to try it again. Well, it's not going to look like what we see with somebody who's been drawing for thousands of hours, mm-hmm. you know. So, and we have to accept that. We have to let ourselves fail as we try these different things, and we try to delve into our interests. And then if money or time were no object, what would you do? Would you go to museums? Would you travel? So to start looking at those things that we are naturally drawn to that maybe we aren't giving ourselves the time to try or the making the effort to fit into our lives. I think with the pandemic, we've seen people who either came home and are there with children, or they came home and have more time. We're starting to see people do gardening that weren't doing gardens. I mean, I even thought I was going to try it, and I know I'm horrible at gardening. And sure enough, I killed the few plants I started in my house. But I planted some outside flowers with my daughter, and those are thriving. Or people coloring on their sidewalks with chalk, with these inspirational messages. And maybe that's not something you would never even have imagined doing before, but you all of a sudden find out that's fun. Or go hug a tree. I hugged a tree. I didn't like the tree across the street from me at the school, but I went to my mother's woods, which my son now owns, and I loved hugging a tree there. And I thought, oh, yeah, this does feel good. You know, just different things in this time that we've seen people opening up to more innovative or creative ways, or just looking. We're all searching for a way to get through this. And so we're turning instinctively to creative ways, journaling or, you know, those kinds of things. So it's just, this is a time when I think we are seeing how important it is to have that in our life, how we're healthier, happier, and emotionally, physically, if we are doing these creative things.
You talk about the importance of scheduling time to create. And when you were talking about the creating a writer's retreat at your mom's house and leaving behind the internet and the interruptions, I think in this day and age, a lot of us bring interruptions with us wherever we go. Mm-hmm. If you sit there and you're even trying to read a book and you've got your phone with you, how often do you just gravitate to the phone and waste 20 minutes, you know, on social media instead of doing what you intended to do? Do you have advice for how to make sure, be disciplined enough to carve out that space and that time?
Ooh, don't use the word discipline. That sounds negative.
Okay.
But the time is not going to just come to you. It's not, you're going to have to make a space for it. And once you discover and start having fun and start playing again and making space for play and for trying new things, as soon as you discover maybe what it is you are drawn to, and it doesn't have to be a big space in your life. It could be 15 minutes in the morning or 15 minutes in the evening or just on weekends, whatever it is, you are actually going to have to make that space because we are all so busy. And like you said, we have our phones with us and boy, that social media just pulls us in. And before we know, we've wasted an hour or two. And that is wasting time. It is time that could be spent making yourself feel better. Because trust me, Facebook isn't going to make you feel better. It's going to make you feel worse about your life. So, but it is when I hear somebody say, well, my kids are grown up. When my kids are gone, then I will do whatever it is that I want to do. And I just shake my head. Because if I had waited till my kids were gone, I'd still be waiting. I have a 17-year-old daughter at home. And how much time I would have lost. And maybe tomorrow, you know, you're going to be busy with something else. So don't wait. Make and create the space for trying these things and doing something creative, whatever it is that you are drawn to, and allow yourself to fail. That's important to remember. But the time's not going to just come to you.
You also write about the importance of surrounding yourself with things that bring you joy, of embracing kindness in your creativity. Mm-hmm. Tell me why you think that's important.
For myself, when I can sit there and I want to write, if I can look around my immediate space and this, I created it so that everywhere I look in this one room, and I have a very small house right now, that I can just smile because there's memories of my mother, memories of my husband who passed away in 2012, or just there's color. Color makes me feel good, or bright. I even look for coffee cups that have bright colors on and stuff. It seems like a silly thing, but I noticed I feel happier with things that are around me that remind me of the people that I loved. And the reason I'm writing is kind of in their memory. They're the ones who believed in me long before I believed in myself. So, and it's true. I mean, the color you paint your walls and the colors of your pillows and in your home is part of being creative. So it's very important for me to be surrounded by things that make me feel good. And kindness and gratitude is also featured in my book because we are happier and more creative if we are being kind to other people. So I do random acts of kindness. If we work gratitude into our lives, so I make sure that in my journal, I'm always looking for things to be grateful for, because then we become happier, healthier, more creative people.
You also write about the importance of connection, which of course is difficult right now, and it's been difficult for you as an introverted, shy person anyway, to find that true connection with others. Why do you think that's important?
I think I discovered how important it was the first time I attended a writer's conference and found out what happens, the creative energy that happens in a room full of people interested in the same thing as you. And I left that conference feeling like high and wanted to go to more conferences. And of course I gained friendships there too, but that's why I started the Lifelong Learners Group. That's why I still need connection with people, because you get energy from creative people. If you want to be more creative, spend time with creative people. If you want to be more faith-filled, spend time with faith-filled people. If you want to be more negative, spend time with negative people, and you'll soon find yourself being pulled down into the negativity. So it's just a very powerful thing to be and to connect with people who you want to be more like.
Mary, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mary Potter Kenyon, her most recent book is Called to Be Creative, A Guide to Reigniting Your Creativity. She lives in Dubuque and is a certified grief counselor and program coordinator for Shalom Spirituality Center. Coming up in just a moment, we are going to talk dogs with a couple of people who love dogs. We're going to talk with Gideon Kidd, who created the I've Pet That Dog handle on social media, and his mom, who has helped him out a lot. The two of them together have written a book. It's called Pet That Dog. This is Talk of Iowa.